and welcome to the Texas Tribune Tribcast for the second week of February. My name is Elise Hugh, joined by CEO and Editor-in-Chief Evan Smith.
Hello, Elise.
Managing Editor Ross Ramsey.
Hello, Elise.
And sitting in for Ben Philpott today is Reeve Hamilton, one of our reporters. Hi, Reeve.
Hello.
Today we're talking a debrief of the Democratic debate, the state of the Republican race, and what a general election matchup between Rick Perry and Bill White might look like. We'll start with Reeve and Ross on the debate debrief. What'd you guys think?
Well, it was interesting. I mean, the set looked like they were at TGI Fridays. It was just a very, very weird debate. It was Farouk Shami, as we expected, kind of dominated the news afterwards, both with, you know, sort of outlandish promises that he made and with some remarkable statements that he made. And Bill White was sort of, he did kind of what he did when he was being elected mayor. He was sort of slow and steady, the sober man, you know, not very exciting, but, you know, nothing remarkable, no bad headlines, move along.
I wonder if Bill White made Shami look more animated, or if Shami made Bill White look more steady.
More steady or dull, or yeah, right. It was really interesting. I mean, you know, I think a lot of people, the people that saw it, I don't think this was as widely viewed as the Republican debates. Rick Perry and Kay Hutchison are the best-known non-Bush politicians in Texas, and so they draw a crowd to these things. Deborah Medina's drawing her own crowds to these things. So the Republican debates were, I think, pretty widely watched. My sense was that not as many people tuned into this, but I think more people probably passed this around and looked at it on the internet and saw funny little statements and, you know, a day without a Mexican is a day without sunshine and moments like that.
I think Shami promising to pay the state if he couldn't bring everybody to full employment was probably something that caught people's attention.
100,000 jobs in 2 years, or I will pay the state $10 million.
Well, and all electric bills will be gone in 10 years.
Yeah, everybody.
I was actually psyched about that, actually. No electric bills.
Well, and actually, of those things, I mean, you know, they're all, you know, various versions of pie in the sky, but that one's probably the closest within reach of all of those things. You know, there's actually a scenario where you could solarize your roof and put up enough wind stuff that you actually didn't have an electric bill.
Which is actually probably what he means, right? Because part of his platform is to get solar panels, sort of blanket the state with solar panels.
Yeah, it's the green jobs thing and building solar panels and building wind and all of that kind of stuff.
But you know, the only way to take it if you were coming to this for the first time was, you know, they talk about politicians buying elections. This guy actually wants to buy an election. Well, and he wants to buy an election by spending all of his money to pay us if he can't perform. I mean, I guess it's a customer service, you know, guarantee, you know.
He's not just buying the election, he's buying the good governing afterwards, too.
Right, he's buying everything. You know, I'll take everything. Just give it all to me. Put it in the bag. I'll take it with me.
We can do this, right?
And I wonder to what degree that's, you know, it's amusing, and we can all laugh at it because all of us who watch this stuff, we don't hear that sort of thing very often, not said so seriously. But I also wonder if it's ultimately a bad thing for him, if it's going to reverberate back negatively on him, or he just undermines his credibility. The fact that he's saying these sort of things does make him sound a little unhinged.
Well, it's a little bit like what The Simpsons do. I mean, you do this thing, you know, The Simpsons, one of the things that they do on The Simpsons is really interesting, is they take reality and they just torque it a little bit. And they don't really lie and they don't really make fun of it. They just sort of take reality and make it, like, more so. So if someone comes out in real politics and says, you know, I think we can create 100,000 jobs in this state in the next 2 years, that's a commonplace. We're used to that. But if somebody says, I think we can create 100,000 jobs in the next 2 years, and if we can't, I'll give you $10 million. It's like that little comic thing that's on the end of it. And I think it does undermine his credibility.
I just think it makes him – you say it's The Simpsons. I thought it was Twin Peaks. I thought there was something vaguely David Lynchian about the entire thing, from the set to the two of them. You know, uh-huh. Bill White was sort of Agent Cooper, you know, kind of earnest, and Shami should have been carrying a log. I mean, it was just the whole thing was weird.
I think somebody coming to this for the very first time – could easily walk away and not really remember exactly what Bill White looked like or said.
Except his ears looked mammoth.
Except he has, you know, as he's noted in all of his speeches, his ears are enormous.
No offense, but jeepers.
I mean, maybe that's perfectly fine for him,
right,
though. I mean,
there's no bad side for him.
Right, I think that's a win.
I mean, do you think it changed the race at all? Shami was the only one to come out of the gate the next day with an endorsement from the Mexican-American.
That's true.
A day without an endorsement is a day without sunshine.
Right, he did get that endorsement from the Mexican-American Democrats. And I just wonder whether it's even fair for us to consider or take him seriously. I mean, Deborah Medina had such a hard time even getting into the two debates. And there's no evidence that Shami really has broken the 12%, the 15% that she's been able to do. And he does sound ridiculous a lot. And so is it
you have to watch. I mean, you have to. This is one of the fun things about politics is that you get these odd characters, whether it's Jesse Ventura or Arnold Schwarzenegger or Victor Morales or Kinky Friedman. I mean, you know, I can keep going. Carol Strayhorn. And you just have to wait and see if it catches on. If you know, I think we probably said this 4 or 5 weeks ago. Oh, and Medina will never go anywhere. She's stuck at 7.
Right. Now she's 24.
Stuck at 24, right?
Right.
You just have to wait and see. I mean, people may actually like the idea that he's saying these things. They may actually like the idea of, I think that utility thing might be kind of interesting. I'd like to know a little bit more about that. Or I don't really like the other guy. Maybe I like this guy. You just have to wait and see how this goes.
But ultimately, people have to imagine a candidate in the job.
Right.
And I'm sorry. I think you look at Shami and you listen to Shami, and I'm certain that Shami means well. His life story is inspiring. I don't take any of that away from him. But you don't look at him and go, oh, okay, he could be governor.
Could you imagine Jesse Ventura in the job before he was elected governor of Minnesota?
No, and I'm not sure that Minnesotans would say on the back end of that that was a good thing ultimately. I think that they may have been right the first time.
I'm just saying it's not determinative. I mean, you may walk into this thing. Deborah Medina has 24%. She's an outside candidate.
Right.
You look at it and you kind of, if you put that test to it and say, do you really think she should be governor? That's really not where we are in this race. Do you really think she should be the nominee, or are you really dissatisfied enough with the other alternatives that you're willing to consider it? We're finding out about Shami. The other thing that you have to take very seriously about this candidate is that he has said, I'll spend what it takes, and alternately, I'll spend $10 million on this campaign. And that means he's going to get a real hearing. And we need to see what happens when he gets a real hearing. He got part of it on Monday night at the debate. He gets some of it from the Shami commercials that we're seeing all over the state. I suspect he's going to close big.
Just one more quick thing on the debate. One thing I was wondering about is, I mean, Shami really needed to sort of hit Bill White on this because he's sort of the presumed front runner. And his one shot was the question he got to direct to Bill White was going with an environmental policy question the best choice?
I just couldn't believe he even asked. Bill White is an energy wonk. That is his.
Whatever else you can't say about him, you know that that's
exactly
his subject, right?
Yeah. And of all subject areas that he chose to ask Bill White a question on, he chose Bill White's like number one area of expertise.
But the substance of it was correct. He said, Mr. Mayor, you have presided over the third most polluted city in the United States, and that is in fact correct. That's where the ratings are right now. And White said, it's gotten better. It's better than it was, and that's also true. But you're still number three. What's the deal with that? And, so Shami's point was to go with that. He's, environment's one of his big things. This is the part of the green jobs. This is they had an argument that only a North Texan could love about, the status of the Barnett shale fields and the benzene up there. They had the conversation about Houston's air. Shami's going someplace with this.
And Reeve, in fact, he may not have attacked him during the question period, but he did at the very end of the debate. I have a real strong memory of this. He may even have used the word failure in describing the mayor. He did attack the mayor, and he tried to attack the kind of hard candy shell that has sprung up around Bill White where, you can't say anything negative about his time as mayor because he was so awesome. Well, Shami was willing to go there. And I will say this. I walked away from the debate more impressed with Shami. I mean, having said all the stuff that we've said, I walked away from the debate more impressed with Shami and a little bit less impressed with White. More impressed with Shami in the sense that, he actually didn't, beyond some of those statements he made that were noteworthy and a little nutty, he didn't not sound like he knew what he was talking about. He actually did, as you point out on the environment thing, he had some facts at his disposal. Right. And although his style of speech is, an issue, you really can't hold against his ethnicity against him. And so he's going to sound the way he sounds. And frankly, he could have sounded crazier. I realize that's damning with faint praise. But I kind of thought, he didn't sound as crazy as he might have. And for all of White's celebrated brilliance, which I think is, legitimate, he's a smart guy and everything, I thought he did fine.
Right.
He didn't blow me away.
Right.
He didn't bowl me over. And I wondered, actually, seeing him in that context, has he historically been a good debater or a bad debater? And what would he look like on stage next to Rick Perry or Kay Bailey Hutchison in the fall? If he gets to that point, will he come across as just this kind of quiet, wonky guy, or will there be some energy and life to him? I wondered about that.
He has a serious Elvis deficit. He's not a charismatic guy. I mean, to the point where he jokes about it in his stump speech. I mean, he's just not that guy. And if you're depending on that sort of electricity, Perry has it to some extent. I think Hutchison's more like White than like Perry. Medina has a little bit of Elvis. Shami has a little bit of Elvis, but whether you just have to wait and see if if it's Bill White and Rick Perry, if it's Kay Hutchison and Bill White, it's going to be a really boring debate.
It'll be like we all took cough syrup.
We'll see. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right. So
before we get there, let's detour over to the Republicans real quick.
Elise, I'm intrigued, as I am probably to an unreasonably high degree. I would be told by anybody probably that I'm paying too much attention to polls at this point. But I am intrigued by these polls that come out now seemingly once every couple of days or once a week or once every week and a half that show the presumed state of the Republican race. It's a snapshot of a moment in time, and presumably by the time that the poll comes out, it's already outdated because the questioners were in the field however long ago. And so by the time it comes out, you kind of go, well, is this even exactly right? Of course, when our poll comes out soon, Elise, it will be perfect. It will be exactly right. But the Rasmussen poll that came out just a couple days ago, last week, say, right, had Medina gaining on Hutchison, and the public policy polling poll, PPP poll, that came out, I guess it was 2 days ago or yesterday.
Yesterday.
Yeah. Maybe the Rasmussen poll, in fact, was only we were like compressed time.
Right.
Rasmussen was only maybe 2 or 3 days ago.
It's all in dog years, fly
and
years.
PPP was yesterday, actually has Medina within 4 points of Hutchison. Perry wasn't exactly blowing the doors off in this poll, by the way. I think he was at 39. But Hutchison was 28 and Medina was at 24, giving some life to the murmurings that, you know, gee, could Medina catch Hutchison? If there's a runoff, could it be Perry and Medina, which nobody would have predicted?
Well, so, and if you're a Republican, let's say you are a Republican incumbent House member, member of Congress, member of the state Senate, and you're in, you know, a number of those people have drawn a bunch of Tea Party opponents and a bunch of challengers. So I spent some time, you know, this debate was in Fort Worth, so I spent some time in Southlake after the debate. Vicki Truitt's got a race. There's 4 people in her race. She's a House member. And chances are that race will go into a runoff. There's 4 people running. If it goes into a runoff, and if Deborah Medina is in a runoff, that's a challenger's best scenario. That's a nightmare for an incumbent.
Because all the runoffs
candidate.
Be on the same day, right?
Because the runoffs are on the same day, and because the Tea Party people, if they and the sort of the not the establishment Republican conservatives are going to feel energized if they've got a candidate for governor and they're going to show up. And it may or may not win the governor's race, but it's sure going to be trouble for the Vicki Truitts of the world, well, if they're in runoff.
And in fact, Reeve has a story on the Tribune site this morning about the race to succeed Brian McCall, in
another
which the,
example,
quote, establishment candidate Mabry Jackson, the Plano City Council member, is running against 2 Tea Party-approved candidates. And if this fellow Wayne Richard, who you wrote about, who is the more Tea Party-ish of the two,
right,
ends up in a runoff with Jackson, the runoff is likely, and Medina is on the ballot on the same day, that's ultimately, as Ross says, very good for Wayne Richard, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, his whole campaign is, I mean, it's entirely just energized people. You know, he has almost no money, and people just show up for him and give him stuff because he has, I mean, he says, I got involved in the Tea Party, but I'm a Republican. But
being the mayor of New Orleans or something.
Given that, I mean, his campaign manager is a former Tea Party leader in the area, and all his support is Tea Party enthusiasts. So, I mean, they're powerful. They're polling really well.
Yeah, I'm skeptical, frankly, of the idea that Medina is going to catch Hutchison. It would be a huge. I'm not saying
it's
not going to happen.
It would be huge.
I'm saying I'm skeptical of whether it could happen. It would be huge.
She
caught Hutchison.
It would be a national story.
It would be a national story. It would give more life to the idea that the Tea Party is not just a fringe movement, but has in fact become itself an establishment force at this point.
Well, March 2nd is going to be this big test of whether the Tea Party movement is big or just loud.
Right.
Is this a bunch of people or is this just a noisy crowd?
And the fact is, even if she comes close, even if she approaches Hutchison but ultimately doesn't make the runoff herself, it is still going to be enormous. Now, of course, all of this assumes something, which is that Hutchison's not going to win the primary herself, not going to come in first. So we're talking now about the idea of Hutchison finishing in third, saying in all likelihood she won't finish in third, she'll finish in second. But we seem to have written off the possibility that the race is not what it appears in the polls, which is itself interesting.
Right. And I don't think it's fair to count out Hutchison. Really.
Oh, no, of course
not. In her defense, I mean, we haven't seen how she's going to close yet, though she's running out of time. Obviously, early voting starts next Tuesday. So,
right.
I mean.
And these polls could all be crap. I mean,
exactly.
They could all be completely wrong. They could be. There are a lot of them. They're all saying roughly the same thing, but they could be wrong.
Two things here. I think the big thing in the polls that is sort of, you know, a lot of us aren't paying attention to is that the last time Rick Perry saw 50% was in an uncontested Republican primary in 2006. There hadn't been a poll since then where he's crossed the so-called reelect number. You know, if you look at a poll on an incumbent, if more than half of the people want to reelect them, then that incumbent said to be in pretty good shape. Rick Perry hadn't had a 50% reelect number since he was elected to the term he's serving now. That's a problem. So you get to a situation where, you know, we're talking about number two and three here. If you talk about number one, the chance here is that you have an incumbent governor who can't win without a runoff. That's a chance. I think Hutchison, one strategy that they can pursue is just get into a runoff, and then you've got a different game. And the game in a runoff is, okay, folks, more than half of us voted against this guy, now we can close. And she'll have the money. She'll have 5 weeks to go.
It's assuming that Medina's voters, if they were asked, who's your second choice if Medina is not the nominee, the assumption on the Hutchison's campaign's part would have to be at that point that their second choice is either A, Kay Bailey, or B, not Rick Perry.
Except right. The Perry people say the opposite. I mean, sources in the Perry campaign say that they have polled second choice picks among Medina people, and they've all picked Perry, if not Medina.
And that even a number of the Hutchison people have a second choice of Perry, not Medina.
Right.
And so that regardless of which one gets in a runoff with Perry, assuming that that's what happens, the Perry people feel reasonably confident. But of course, what are they going to say?
If it's a runoff, March 3rd is a complete reset of the race. It's a completely different race. You know, everything that you say now, everything that you see now is different on March 3rd. You know, you have an incumbent who didn't get 50%. Now you've got an incumbent on the run. You've got a Hutchison campaign, if it's Hutchison in a runoff, that is suddenly energized by the fact that they now have a crack at a guy. It's a long period this time. March 2nd is the primary. The runoff isn't until April 13th.
It's almost six weeks. Right.
It's a long period. She's still in the United States Senate, which actually comes into play here. Hi, I'm a United States Senator, and I'm raising money for my gubernatorial campaign. Can you help me? Different from, hi, I used to be a U.S. Senator. I think
probably helps not to say you're going to quit.
If you're in the Hutchison camp, a runoff is a good and viable opportunity here.
I want to come back to this 50% number, mm-hmm. Reeve and Ross, this reelect number, and Elise. So we entered the new polls into the Tribune's little polling content well to get really wonky here yesterday, and so I was moved to go back and look at all the polls that we had in there. Well, back in June of last year, Rick Perry was at exactly the number that he is in that public policy polling poll, which is 39.
Right. Yeah.
Remember that 39 is also the number that he got in the general election against three opponents in 06.
Right.
I wonder about that. You know, what more information do people need about this guy? The idea that there's anybody undecided at this point, you got Rick Perry for 10 years, you got Kay Bailey Hutchison for 16 years. What don't you know about these guys that's holding you back from pulling the trigger? If I'm the Perry campaign, that is a lingering concern. It's not as if all of a sudden a bunch of people are going, well, he's new. We should kind of give him some time to grow on us. He's not new. So if they're not with him now, what's going to make them be with him anytime soon? It's interesting that he can't get above that number, if that number's accurate.
It's the reelect number. If you're his political doctor, this is the thing that makes you stand back and go, I'd like to do some tests on this, because your reelect number isn't what it ought to be.
The Perry people like to say, what do you call a guy who got 39% in a four-way race? You call him governor.
Right.
So
the end, it won't matter. But here's a case in which this is not the general election where the guy with the most toys wins. It's a case where if you don't get above 50, you're going to have to go into a runoff.
Right.
Somebody in a runoff is going to make 50% because there were only two people in a race, right? You can't win a runoff without 50.
Right.
True?
Right.
He's going to have to get half the vote.
There's only two candidates.
He's going to have to get half the vote in a runoff.
Let's go forward. Let's say it's April 14th. Perry's won the runoff, let's just say. And you're going forward. Now it's presumably Bill White, presumably Rick Perry, giant leaps of faith there. And then in June, the Libertarian Party is going to name whoever their gubernatorial candidate is. This is going to be important because when we go to November, we're going to be talking about this again, and it's going to be, can the winner of this race cross 50, or will the Libertarian draw off so many votes? It becomes a really interesting piece of math.
I got a question for you. I want to know. Come on.
Yeah.
Could Deborah Medina, having failed in the Republican primary, become the Libertarian candidate for governor?
No.
Have you not asked her about that?
No, she couldn't.
Procedurally, she's disqualified.
She also, she says she wouldn't, but of course, would she say right now?
What about Ebra Adina? Could she put on a fancy mustache?
As a practical matter, if you vote in another primary, you're disqualified as a candidate.
Anyway.
So if she votes for herself on March 2nd,
How crazy like a fox would it be for her not to keep her options open?
I like me so much, I didn't vote for me.
Right.
Well, we've walked right into my topic, which is what this general election would look like. Oh, it's beautiful. And I just think a Perry-White matchup would be so fascinating. And this is not even considering this whole libertarian element. But I just think it would be so fascinating because it's such a study in contrast. I mean, these guys are just like polar opposites, yin and yang. And so... you know, you have Mr. Charisma, great on the stump, to Mr. Anti-Charisma. You have the wonky guy versus the anti-intellectual. You know, I feel
the two of them, they have a full set of hair.
Right.
Actually, right? Or two
exactly.
Small.
Yeah. So
Two and a half sets of hair. Right?
I really, you know, I'm curious about what that would look like and kind of want to see it, though I don't want to count out Medina or Hutchison yet, of course.
Or Shami.
I wouldn't count anybody.
Or
Shami. At this
Sorry,
point in the race, I know I'm always the guy that does this, but at this point in the race, you know, these races are still really open. There are... at least four really well-funded candidates still going.
With an awful lot of money to spend between now and March 2nd.
Awful lot of money and 21, 22, 23 days to persuade people who haven't tuned in yet. As hard as that is for us to believe because we're in this all the time, a lot of people aren't paying attention to this. And then the fifth candidate, Deborah Medina, has this unique ability to get free press. And so that elevates her to a point where, you know, it's like having money, right? The only reason you want money is so people know who you are. I think a lot of things could happen, but I think, you know, the most likely outcome at this point is probably Perry White. It could be Perry. It could be Hutchison White.
Perry White.
Perry White was the
Superman.
Editor of Superman. That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Clark Kent's boss.
Kind of awesome, actually.
Yeah. But you're already counting in the Libertarian candidate in November, it sounds like.
I'm counting them in as a spoiler. I mean, you know, there are generally 3 to 6 races in legislative races where the winner – doesn't get more than 50%, and it's because a libertarian candidate bled off some votes. And the conventional wisdom on this is that libertarians bleed votes away from Republicans and kind of cheat them out of these general election things. I think it could happen in a governor's race.
Yeah, but it would have to be a close governor's race.
It would.
And I think that all of us sitting here may wish for a competitive governor's race, regardless of the outcome of the primaries, maybe better for us to cover. But from a Maddox standpoint, purely, even Bill White, well-funded and a big brand, is going to have a hard time getting enough Republicans to turn and vote Democratic unless something happens between now and the fall that we're not predicting, no?
Well, there's this question about Farouk Shami. Can you get elected with that name? Can you get elected with that accent? Can you get elected with those ideas? And really, the biggest deficit or the biggest strike against him is the D.
Can you get elected with that party?
Can you get elected with a D after your name? And I think all the other things are sort of, you know, almost academic at that point. John McCain, while he was losing nationally, creamed Obama in Texas. It was a 12-point win.
And that was in 2008 when Democratic excitement was high. So
right. I mean, you would have to have such a groundswell of support for White and hostility toward Perry. You would have to assume that Hutchison people, if Perry wins the primary, either in the first or second round, Hutchison people decide, in fact, contrary to your sources, which I don't doubt believe what they told you, contrary to that, the Hutchison people are not going to gravitate toward Perry. Contrary to the national mood, independents are going to be willing to throw him with a Democrat.
Yeah, I think it's
you're going to have to assume that the economy nationally improves to the point that anybody with a D next to his or her name is not saddled with Washington, because you know that if Perry could tie Hutchison to Washington, he'll certainly make every attempt to tie White to Obama.
Right.
And then
Bill White was in the Energy Department under Bill Clinton.
Right.
Those guys are Democrats.
White's,
right?
And he was former chair of the Democratic Party. I mean,
right.
the question is White going to run away from Obama? You know, that's
it's an interesting question. And, you know, I think you're right. I mean, you have to all the Democrats would have to do to win the governor's race, whether it's Perry or Hutchison or Medina, is change the national mood, change the mood in Texas, flip the state from red to blue. I think they have to depend on the Republican candidate making a huge mistake and the Democratic candidate running a perfect campaign. I think other than that,
it's plausible.
Right, all we need is Perry White and Superman. Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, getting back to your point about how, I mean, one thing that will, you know, make it competitive or not is there will be sort of clear, distinct differences between the two candidates if it happens to be Perry White, which is what you want to talk about. But I wonder how much of that is just are they just shallow sort of surface differences that people will appreciate? Because I feel like in a debate, if you have Perry versus White, it'll be probably a very animated guy versus very sort of the wonky sort of steady guy that we saw earlier this week. And that, like you said, people didn't really respond to that. So maybe he needs to work on his I guess, get his Elvis somewhere. But
I think they totally have different points of view on major policy issues, though. I mean, they have total polar opposite policy differences, too, which will be really interesting to see.
I'd like to, you know, I don't doubt that you're right.
Yeah.
I'd actually like to have those put in front of me.
We could make a charticle.
If Katie Bacon is listening, this would be a good press release.
She's a big
fan. Five differences between Perry and White.
Katie Bacon is the press secretary for Bill White.
Press secretary Bill White on big issues. Because while I expect that there are those differences, you know, you had Shami asking White, do you support death penalty?
Right.
Yes. Well, where is he and Governor Perry on that? Different. Now, you know, he might say, well, he did in fact make a point of bringing up the Forensic Science Commission in the debate and say, unlike Governor Perry, I wouldn't.
They're opposites on choice. Right. They have different immigration policies.
I'd like to hear the five issues that the White campaign thinks its differences with the Perry campaign provide the most opportunity.
Well, here's the other thing. I mean, if you get Hutchison in the Republican slot against White, I think the differences are smaller.
They're much smaller.
And that's also an interesting contrast. It's sort of, okay, so now give me five.
And this was why it was always assumed White was loath to get in the race. When there was a sense that Hutchison might well be the nominee, the White people were saying, well, where's the room for us to really run against her in the middle where the race is going to be decided? It sort of didn't there.
So this is the Evan Smith drop and give me five challenge.
On the other hand, if it's Medina and White, there'll be some differences.
Drop and give me eight.
And there are even clearer physical differences between those two than there are between
you think?
Perry and White.
On that note, that's all the time we have. So on behalf of Ross, Reeve, and Evan, my name is Elise. Thank you for listening.